It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and heavy D up in a limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mar. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? The hard, you never thought a hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Pizza Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri, Funkmaster Flex, Love Bug, Starsky. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Caught a crib, same number, same hood, and it's all good. Yeah, and if you don't know, now you know. Oh, don't you dare look back. Just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back. She said, shut up and dance with me. This woman is my destiny.
Good morning, listeners of RMU Radio, ladies and gentlemen from all over the planet Earth. Hopefully, some of you are tuning in today. Listen to a little bit of Will, Sam, and Sam to bring in your morning. This is the Tuesday, January 15th, I believe. January 16th, the day after Martin Luther King Day. First day of classes for the week here at Robert Morris University. And coming to you live is Sam Anthony, Samuel Elizabeth Ferentz, and William Robert Camilleri.
Hello. Good morning.
Saying good morning. You heard it there from Will.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're here to fill you in on your daily Pittsburgh, Philly, and Robert Morris sports intake. And you know what? We have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Gentlemen. And I think the first thing we have to talk about is really, you know, well, I'm not going to lie. To say last Tuesday, even last Thursday, that it was going to be the Philadelphia Eagles advancing and not the Pittsburgh Steelers to the conference championship game, I would have laughed because, you know what, I would have been like, it would be at least both because the Steelers are a sure thing. And honestly, it was kind of a crapshoot with the Philadelphia Eagles. But again, here we are.
Yes.
And I just, you know, first, let's start off with what are your thoughts on the Philadelphia Eagles performance? What went well? What didn't go well? And what makes you believe that they're going to be able to defeat the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday?
I think the biggest key is defeating and shutting down Stephon Diggs. Because I have complete and total faith in our defensive line and controlling their run game. Honestly, I even talked to you about it. I would have preferred to have the Saints because they don't really have a receiver. Their strength is in the ground game, and I think we saw that against the Vikings defense, who have an almost as good run defense as the Eagles. Completely shut down. Like, you didn't hear
Alvin Kamara or Mark Ingram
at all during that game.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest key, it's not shutting down Case Keenum, because I can't believe I'm saying it, but it's Case Keenum in the NFC Championship game. I think.
Hey,
really,
man, I'm just saying, MVP type numbers. You know, if Carson Wentz wasn't in the picture in the NFC, everyone would be talking about Case Keenum. Like,
that's true.
It is very interesting, though, that the two quarterbacks starting in the AFC Championship or NFC Championship game were both backups for the LA Rams last year behind Jared Goff, who didn't make it. But also the fact that Jeff Fisher had three quarterbacks with the caliber to potentially play in an NFC Championship game or a Super Bowl and still went 7-9.
Yeah, he didn't make it. I saw a picture. It showed both of them together, and it said, the NFC Championship game, a story of how two young quarterbacks escaped the regime of Jeff Fisher.
I mean, it just isn't that crazy, because sometimes you just never know, and you got to give a lot of credit to the Minnesota Vikings and their offensive coaching staff, because the fact that really they were able to make Case Keenum into the quarterback he is, it really says a lot about the staff, because that really came down to coaching, because Case Keenum has these bounced from place to place to place, and he's never been great. And all of a sudden, you know, he's putting up these ridiculous numbers. He put together a game-winning, you know, touchdown throw that people in Minnesota are going to remember that play for the rest of their lives. It's immaculate reception-level excitement, you know, where, like, you thought it was all over, and all of a sudden something spectacular happens, and, like, it changes the way you view that team. I mean, to me, like, even if they didn't go to the Super Bowl, I think you'd still talk about it.
You know, I've seen videos where people put the play to this tune of My Heart Will Go On, but that one, my Lord, was the funniest.
Oh, it hurts watching it. Oh,
it's I mean, that the guy that made that missed the tackle, I mean, he is a rookie. We'll start out with that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a rookie. But yeah, he had a good season. I think he had 73 tackles and 4 interceptions. I mean, people were, unfortunately, that's going to be the play that Saints fans remember of him, at least for now. But my Lord, that was. Thank you.
Hey, a story that I think would fit perfectly with this music. Former Robert Morris safety Marcellus Branch received a reserve/future contract with the Falcons yesterday.
No way.
Yes.
That's a big deal for Robert Morris.
I don't know what that means because I've never heard.
That means so like rather than like practice squad, like he's like the middle guy. Like he's still on the practice squad right there, but that means that they like him enough and they believe that eventually he's going to be someone they want to put on their roster. So, you could, so basically, like it's like getting called up from the, in hockey terms, it's like getting called up from the ECHL.
To the AHL.
To the AHL.
Okay.
Or in Major League Baseball, it's like being named to the 40-man roster. You're not on that 25-man roster to be in the pros yet.
That makes sense.
But you're on the 40-man.
Thank you for putting it in other sports terms.
I try. You know, my heart will go on for you, Will.
Thank you.
But also, can we, while this beautiful music plays, can we put to rest the rumors that the Saints corner purposely missed the tackle?
I haven't heard that.
That was a rumor?
The rumor is that the NFL has paid off the New Orleans Saints for that specific moment, to build up to this specific moment, and to miss the tackle.
So you're telling me not only did they need this exact situation to happen where they were down with like 5 seconds left and just so happened that Case Keenum was able to throw that ball to hit him in that way, and then the NFL paid that corner to miss it.
Yep. That's exactly what the people have been saying, because they think that tackle was so blatant that they missed it so badly that it had to have been rigged. But I think he just missed the tackle.
Yeah, well, that looked
it was a bad missed tackle. I mean, it looks like he just kind of like laid down.
Well, no, if you see. It actually, the play that he was trying to make made a lot of sense.
He was taking out his legs.
So that he would fall.
Well, and he was, the whole thing is, okay, if he catches it, don't let him go out of bounds.
So he was going on that angle so that he couldn't get out of bounds.
So that he would catch it and come down and then he'd tackle him.
Because they assumed he was making the move to go out of bounds.
Right.
Which would have made sense. He just timed it wrong.
Yeah, and that, I forget who the safety was that ran into him and then fell over. I think you could equally put the blame on him, because how do you go, why are you trying to tackle him from behind? Why aren't you looking forward? Like,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, either way, the Minnesota Vikings are in. Their heart will go on to the NFC Championship game. I'll keep making these
in
puns.
Philadelphia.
And Philadelphia.
It's
meanwhile, the New Orleans Saints will sink to the bottom of the ocean with the Titanic. You'll float too. You'll float too.
Oh, wow.
I made an It reference there too. I'm on fire today. But yeah. So also, on a side note, did you hear that the NFL shop sent conference championship gear for each team for Saints fans and for Pittsburgh Steelers fans? They sent like NFL shop sent a little email that was like, congratulations, like you're conference championship bound, and people are really mad about it. And it's pretty funny. Okay, that's perfect for this. Just let it take in. Steelers fans and Saints fans, you're not conference championship bound. Sam's crying. Antonio Brown crying in the locker room. Sorry, Ben Roethlisberger's playing for 3 more years, apparently. So, and Le'Veon Bell's not going to retire, sit out a season of his franchise tag. And Martavis Bryant wants to stay as a Pittsburgh Steeler. It's all coming together, Will. And then they're going to draft the quarterback of the future and be good forever.
And then make it to the divisional round and lose to the Jags.
But all that matters is that the New England Patriots in about 2 years will be bad for the next 15.
Yes.
So just remember that, and your heart too.
That was great. That was a good ending to that song.
I thought so, too. We had a nice little moment there. All right. So now that we've had our little time, you know, a little music sesh, realistically, who wins each game? So we're looking at, let's start with we talked Philadelphia, Minnesota, really. And you said, you know, playing, you know, into the Eagles defense, you know,
I have enough confidence in our receivers, our tight ends and our running backs that they can make enough plays to make Nick Foles look good or to get into the end zone.
So here's the Eagles end game. All right. Their offense should be shooting for 20 points and their defense should be shooting to allow under 20 points because again,
that's how you win the game.
You know what? I wasn't done. I can mute you if I want. I have full control because if you're interested in hearing Sam Farrens, because the Eagles offense realistically isn't going to score more than 20 points.
No.
So it again falls on the defense to make those stops because again, realistically, were the Eagles really going to score more than 15 points in that football game?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. But like, the reason they won that game was the defense
mm-hmm.
because they completely shut down the Falcons yes. offense, which last year with Kyle Shanahan was unbelievable. I mean, Kyle Shanahan proving why he's one of the best coaches in the league with that offense and then getting a head coaching job where he finally got a quarterback and became spectacular. So really, it's going to come down to that. I mean, I think you knew all along it's going to be a defensive battle.
Yes.
Because it is two of the best defenses in the league.
That's why I discussed the defense first when you said so predictions.
When you're talking Nick Foles, and yes, it's talking about limiting turnovers.
Right.
You know, Nick Foles needs to we all agree in that AFC divisional Steelers Jaguars that Ben Roethlisberger significantly outplayed Blake Bortles, but what Ben Roethlisberger did that cost his team the game was those two turnovers that put the Jags defense in easy scoring position. And if Nick Foles makes those mistakes that puts Minnesota and Case Keem in a chance to get points no matter what or get an easy touchdown, they're in a lot of trouble because there's only so much the Eagles defense can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at, I think he proved that he is thinking about that and constantly trying to limit that in that the play. It was at some point in the first half, I think it was even the first quarter, on their scoring drive when I think it was Jay Ajayi or Corey Clement fumbled the ball like on the 1 yard line.
No, and he just fell on it.
He dove on it. Yeah. So I think that, and I know it's just one play and one circumstance, but I think
no, but it's like it's the awareness to do that.
Yeah, he's actively thinking about it and knowing that, hey, we need this score.
Yeah. Which is, I think, is very important. You know, that ended up being a big deal because even though he didn't score on that play, they went on fourth down and they scored. And that is a big deal, especially in a game that ends 15-10. And honestly, it's going to be very similar if the Eagles want to win. If Minnesota wins, it's just putting up scores. It's beating that defense. But it's hard because Eagles have one of the best defenses in the NFL, if not the best defense in the NFL.
I think the Vikings and Eagles are 1-2. I don't know the order. But
yeah.
No, Jags are in there. Having the number one defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
No, last week during the Vikings game they were saying it was the Vikings.
Either way, all very good defenses.
Yes.
Except for we can fact check at a later time if we so desire. So then, all right, that's a perfect chance to transition here. So, well, we all understand that New England Patriots are very, very heavily favored to win this football game, that most people, when it comes down to it, will pick New England. And yes, I know that may seem a little deflating to many, many fans who spied a Jacksonville Jaguars championship, potentially, you know, forming a real dynasty, not built on lies and cheating. Sorry, I had to do it.
Aren't you from New England?
Yeah, you're 100% correct, and you know I had to live with it as a Steelers fan. So, you know, really, it's like being a prisoner of war. Not really. I take that back.
Wow.
but yes. So I spent years up in New England. They don't like me up there. I know, shocking, right? After some of the statements I've just made. But essentially, we all understand the New England Patriots are most likely going to win this football game, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You got Tommy Terrific throwing passes to big time Rob Gronkowski, who's just so giant of a man that you can't cover him with a quarterback, you can't cover him with a linebacker, you can't cover him with both because he's just such a massive individual. So what do the Jaguars do to get the win?
Use, pound, continue to use their strength, Leonard Fournette. I think he was, I don't think they used him enough in the victory over the Steelers.
No,
I'm going to be honest with you.
Especially when hurt. They were up, too. Like,
well, he was hurt at some point, I think.
He was hurt
the end
at
of
some
the second,
point.
But then he was there the whole second half.
But, I mean, the Jaguars, I don't think have enough. I mean, it's the Patriots defense, but they don't have enough on the passing game. Blake Bortles, he is a dual threat quarterback, but you saw how the Patriots were able to adapt to Marcus Mariota in their game. I think if they want to succeed, they need to pound the ball on the ground.
Yeah. No, I mean, Leonard Fournette's a great running back. The Patriots' defense is not good by any means.
Which baffles me because Matt Patricia's been at the top of the list
well,
for
you know
many
what,
head coaching.
You know what makes Matt Patricia good? And you're right, it's talking about adapting to teams' games. So it's the whole concept of bend but don't break.
Yeah.
Where you may be, you know, letting up points, letting up yards. And for the Patriots, a lot of it is just a lot of yardage. And then stopping in the red zone, forcing field goals. But in terms of the bend but don't break, like, you see their defense is consistently ranked low in terms of yardage.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still higher in terms of scoring defense. So, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, that they're Philly or Minnesota or Jacksonville good. They're 100% definitely the worst defense left in the playoffs. I mean, you can't argue that. It's just no team has that intangible that Tom Brady. If you had Carson Wentz in there, I would throw Carson Wentz's name in the ring. The guy who, when it all comes down to it and you need to play at the end of the game, they can do it because they just have that kind of like intangible. Like Ben Roethlisberger has it. And Ben Roethlisberger was making plays at the end of that game. It was just the defense wasn't making stops. So that's what makes the difference there. And it's getting to a point in that game where either you have him figured out where he can't make that play, or you use guys like Leonard Fournette. You have the ball, and you prevent Tom Brady from even getting a chance to make that fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah, and I think I know we've talked about before how the Jaguars have shut down defense in the passing game, and you know, I know, and I also know that we were playing Ben Roethlisberger and the quote-unquote killer bees, but I wasn't convinced during the Steelers game. Ben made throws that as soon as he threw, I said, oh no, please no. And somehow everyone managed to bring them down. I don't know how, but they did. And I think going from Ben and all that to Tom Brady and Gronk and his mediocre wide receivers.
Wait, hold on. Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola, mediocre wide receivers.
They're not Antonio Brown's Le'Veon Bell.
I don't think they've lived up to
Brandon Cooks has had a very excellent year. I'd argue that he's a very good wide receiver.
I don't know. And maybe it's just because they don't make headlines. But
that's also just the Patriots. That's
true.
Because, again, except when you're playing Brady next to a guy like Rob Gronkowski, you're not necessarily going to make headlines. I'd argue that guys like Brandon Cooks are probably as good, if not a little bit better, than the Steelers 2 and the Steelers 3 and Martavis Bryant and Juju Smith-Schuster. As good as they are, you know, Brandon Cooks is, and again, you know, you can look at that New England Saints trade and argue who won it because it seems to benefit both teams very well. And same with Amendola. I mean, if they had Edelman in there, like, their wide receiving core is good. It's legit. It's full of weapons.
How similar do you think, the more I look at it, the more I think of how similar the Patriots' offense is to the Eagles' offense with Carson Wentz? Because you think about it, you have your superstar tight end in Gronk and Zach Ertz.
Which are probably the two best tight ends in the league.
Right.
Maybe Travis Kelce and Kyle Rudolph get in there.
Yeah. You have a wide receiving core that's good, but there's not really one kind of standout.
Yeah, not like an Antonio Brown or a Julio Jones
where
you know the ball's coming to them.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you have running backs that kind of stay out of the spotlight but can get the job done when they need to. Like, I think the only difference is Jay Ajayi is kind of more outspoken than any of the Patriots running backs, but still.
Then you have Blunt, a former Patriots running back, playing kind of a similar role that he had in New England.
Right.
I'd argue the play calling is very similar, too, mm-hmm. where, like, you see, like, new things and, like, you know, again, based on the situation. They adjust very well to the players they have on the field, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know Carson Wentz's playbook was more wide open in terms of passing plays.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I saw a little bit more creativity with the Nick Foles playbook. You saw a lot of direct snaps to Nelson Agholor coming on the motion, making plays like that, getting kind of a quick 10 yards, a sneaky 10 yards, to get, you know, the ball moving any way you can.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I'd argue that they're very similar. I think if you're the Minnesota Vikings, or not the Minnesota, but the Philadelphia Eagles, you're a little bit concerned of playing New England, though, just for the fact that your offense is going to struggle no matter who you face, mm-hmm. whether it's the Jags defense or whether it's the Patriots defense, because Nick Foles, again, doesn't have that same intangible.
Right.
In terms of playing into your game, which is playing a good defensive game, you want to play Blake Bortles every time.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to try and run it right up the gut
mm-hmm.
with Leonard Fournette, because that's the name of your game,
right.
is your run defense. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to know what to do when the game's forced into Blake Bortles' hands.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, either way, I think there are positives and negatives to playing all three of these teams. I think the biggest test in my mind is this week. Because I think, I mean, the Jags defense is good, but I think the Vikings defense is better.
Hey, don't hit on Saxonville.
Okay. And the Patriots defense is worse, so that kind of counterbalances the lackluster of our quarterback. I have enough confidence in our defense that even with how good the Patriots are, I think they've shown weaknesses this year. And I think that our defense is good enough to exploit them. So in my mind, the bigger game is almost the NFC Championship game this week.
Hey, man, about the Jacksonville Jaguars would probably agree with you, too. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to get back to that real quick. I was finishing up. If you're the Jacksonville Jaguars,
okay.
they almost have to take a step back and kind of, I don't want to say grow up, because you got past the Steelers, but now you're coming to the Patriots. And I think if anyone's going to stop the Patriots when we're winning the Super Bowl, I mean, obviously it's them, but out of the four teams remaining, you know, it's Patriots, Jags, Eagles, Vikings. Also, I don't know if you saw, and this kind of makes you stop and think how diverse the Patriots' offense is. Out of the last, I think, seven offensive touchdowns for the Patriots in the postseason, James White had six of them. So, like you said, the running back staying out of the limelight, like, until, you know, James White was injured most of the post or
and
regular
the thing
season.
Is you're still, you know, nobody's still talking about James White, which is incredible.
I didn't know who he was. Like, when you said his name, I had no idea. Don't know.
He had three touchdowns and the 2-point conversion in the Super Bowl that won it.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting to note about the NFC game is the Eagles are the underdogs again. Which, from everybody, it's like a 3.5-point favorite towards the Vikings currently. Which I'm, for the first time, okay with. Because normally I'd be very upset and angry that the number one seed in the NFL and the NFC
isn't favored
at home. But I'm okay with it. And that's because they've been like that all season. So I feel like if they were the favorite coming into this game, it would honestly hurt us more, because I think they'd be more relaxed. Whereas I think they still believe there's something to prove, and I think either way,
I think they do still have something to prove too. I think that until they go and they're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy, especially for Nick Foles, there's gonna always be the whispers that, you know, again, if Carson Wentz was in quarterback, you know, this would be a no-brainer. We'd be in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
We'd win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that. I'm still a believer that if Carson Wentz is quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, there's a very good chance they'd be hoisting up the Lombardi Trophy for the first time in the history of the program or in the history of the franchise. And Nick Foles has the opportunity to go and prove everyone wrong. And I think that you're right. You know, keeping them as the underdog, you know, it keeps that mentality. And it's just the understanding from the entire team that they have a lot to prove because nobody thinks they're going to win.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's kind of funny that three out of the four teams are nowhere near Minnesota. Besides the actual Vikings, who could be the first team to host and play in a Super Bowl. Well, I think they're the farthest. This is the farthest any hosting city has made it in the playoffs. Because I don't think anybody's ever made it past the divisional round before. But you think about it, it's Philadelphia, New England, and Jacksonville. They're all East Coast teams having to go out into the middle of nowhere for the Super Bowl.
Hey, but it's a brand new, nice dome.
I don't care. It's still Minnesota.
You ever been to Minnesota?
In February, yes. I've been to Minnesota in the summer. It's very nice there. However, I've also been to North Dakota in the winter. Or South, wherever we were.
North Dakota.
North Dakota, thank you. And, I mean, we were there in what, like, early October, and it was cold. Let alone snowing and however it is in February. One of the biggest things I've always seen with the Super Bowl is kind of all of the events in and around the stadium leading up to it. I don't know how you can do that when it's, you know, 5 degrees and thunder snow outside.
When you have belligerent fans.
That's true. That also, yeah, alcohol.
All right, so we're going to switch for the last 15 minutes to Robert Morse. Mm-hmm. You know, give a little scoop on everything that's been going on because there was some exciting women's basketball this past weekend.
Oh, wow.
But before we go to that, I want your Super Bowl picks. Who's going to the Super Bowl right now?
Eagles.
Will. Eagles and?
Patriots.
Sam?
Patriots, Vikings.
Vikings, Jags is my pick.
And wow, we're all different. Ooh.
We'll have to see who's right. Maybe we can place a friendly wager on it during the break. We'll see. We'll see. All right. So, Robert Morris, you know what? Let's talk about women's basketball first. You gotta give the women's basketball team some love, especially because we did interviews with all the international players yesterday, and Irek Ozzy Mamadou said, "quote unquote, you haven't even seen our best yet. That we're only getting better, and once we get there, you know, you guys are gonna be impressed with what you see." And that's very exciting considering that, again, going into an NEC battle versus St. Francis, the two only undefeated teams left in the NEC. And Robert Morris, I'm going to be entirely honest, from watching that game, was dominated for most of that game. Robert Morris committed 33 turnovers. They shot well, but they only shot well because they weren't getting off a lot of shots. They were breaking the full court press that St. Francis was throwing at them, but then they would go down the court and turn it over, drive it into the paint. They let their best player, Jessica Kovac, put up 42 points. Granted, she took 34 shots, but she got 42 points. but it ended with a Megan Smith buzzer beater for the win, 63-62. And, I mean, just incredible atmosphere, incredible way to end that game. Big statement win for Robert Morris, establishing themselves as the best team in the NEC, beating really what a lot of people believed was the best team in the NEC. I mean, a team that could put up 100 points. Robert Morris held them to 62.
Interesting to note, I think in the past it was like three seasons, or either two or three. There have been 500-point games, three of which were by St. Francis and two of which were by Robert Morris.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because they really are the powerhouses in the NEC in women's basketball.
And also, RMU women's basketball is now the only undefeated NEC team, not only in women's basketball, but also in men's basketball, because our men's team got manhandled by the other St. Francis.
But, again, they came back, they bounced back, and they got the win against Fairleigh Dickinson.
That's true.
And they're now sitting alone atop the NEC. So Robert Morris has control of both men's and women's basketball in the Northeast Conference. Which is a very refreshing sight.
Yeah.
After, you know, really the struggles of men's basketball. And you got to give, I give Coach Andy Tuohy a lot of credit because, again, it's putting together 11 new players, a lot of personalities, especially after, you know, kind of some of the personalities that really, really did a number to this program. You know, the Elijah Minis that really, you know, didn't want to be there, the controversy involving Elijah, you know, Elijah's gone, you know, missing the characters like Lucky Jones who really helped kind of, you know, bring everyone together. All of a sudden, you know, they're a team again. And, you know, guys like Kobe Thomas are making big plays. And Robert Morris is looking, you know, NCAA tournament time. Here we go. I mean, there's still a long road ahead. Mm-hmm. But, again, I mean, there's a lot to like. So,
yeah, I mean, we're in January and there are discussions of RMU being a 15 seed.
Exactly. And, you know, to me, the interesting debate would be, so if Robert Morris gets, and it's a little too early to say, but this is why you do these things and you have these discussions. If Robert Morris were to get a 15 seed, even if they didn't win that game, even if they didn't pull off the upset, is Coach Tuohy gone? Is he going somewhere else?
No.
No?
No. I think he's put in
too much time and energy.
Especially with the situation of college basketball as it is with players being one and done, or in our case, one and up and done or whatever. I think he kind of looks at himself as the one constant on this team. And, I mean, I think his success up until now could warrant him going somewhere else. But I think he has faith in our program. I think he likes it here. I mean, they treat him very well. He's getting a brand new arena to fill. I think he can see that this program is kind of at a tipping point, and I think he's trying his best to tip it forward and not tip it backwards. And I think if it does tip forward, then he will be here. Because I honestly, like, if you can be the one person that says, hey, I built this program, you know, I transformed Robert Morris basketball from, you know, low level, you know, 16, 15 seed to pushing and, you know, competing against higher level, well-known men's basketball teams.
Yeah, if there was any, I don't know if there is, that would be kind of funny. If there was any way Andy Tuohy could get a comeback coach of the year award, he is building his case. Coming back from the last few seasons and just completely turning around a program, the program's culture. And just coming out with, so far, a very good outcome.
But here's my thought, all right, is, again, we've gotten to the culture in college basketball where really each year for Robert Morris is going to be a new-look team. It's going to be a rebuild. It's going to be, you know, who the heck's here? Who's leaving? Because I promise you, Andy Tuohy already has an idea of who's leaving so that he can fill those holes next year.
I mean, they probably already started recruiting for next year.
Isn't that exhausting? And why would you not, if the offer was there, because it will be there if they get a 15 seed in the tournament, why would you not go somewhere bigger, better conference, less likely for that, you know, that movement?
Well, in my opinion, you're still going to have that movement no matter what. It's just a different caliber of player.
But in my opinion too, the higher levels you go, the less of it that's going to happen, because in terms of like how big of a move you're realistically going to be able to make. You know, with Robert Morris in Division One, there every conference, almost every conference is ranked higher than the NEC, which means that almost any move you make within Division One is going to be better than Robert Morris. You go up to a Patriot League, to a league like the A-10, where you're more, you know, middle of the pack. You know, you're getting a lot of guys where that's their ceiling. They're not going to be able to get playing time at a bigger school. And if they are, it's not going to be the starting minutes that they so desire. And they could still compete. You know, like, look at teams like the University of Rhode Island is a prime example. They're going to be probably a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. And a lot of those guys, most of them have stayed their entire careers because, you know, they're not ever going to be, Rhode Island will never be, you know, a top 5 seed in the tourney. But if they went to a team that was going to be a top 5 seed in the tourney, they would never get minutes.
Right.
So that's my argument. And Tool's a young coach, which is very enticing to a lot of people because they can lock him down for a long time. And if he has a record year here, I could really see it happening. So,
see, I don't know. I think if there was any point for him to leave, I think he would have done it after we played Duke, because that team showed a lot of promise, even in that Duke game, even with the team that ended up winning the national championship that year. And had guys like Julie Okafor on their team.
But see, a lot's changed in college basketball since that point. I mean, it's become a transfer culture.
I mean, I think more that was than that it was that was in, the beginning though.
It was.
You could see it. You saw it. But I mean, with you half saw, of our team,
you saw the repercussions of that those following years, and I don't think even Tool could have foreseen the drop off.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so to me, that's where things have changed. And to me, that's where when you get one of those offers, you maybe take it a little bit more serious.
I mean, I believe a few years ago, he was offered the job at Quinnipiac, was he?
Last year, it was believed that Quinnipiac was trying to get him to come.
Mm-hmm.
When he beat Kentucky, Siena sent Coach Tool an offer. And I'm sure there were offers that came after Duke, like you said. So, you know what? It's a fair argument to say why he would stay, because he's clear. I mean, every year it seems like he's getting offered something else. And, you know, he took that contract extension last year until the 2021-2022 season.
Mm-hmm.
But I just... It'll be interesting. I still think that, you know, again, Tool's almost looking for that right opportunity, the one that's, you know, the next step on the ladder.
Mm-hmm. And I think you really have to look at it's. I think you have to look at who he is as a person, more than just the money and the name appeal of schools, because, you know, I think he does have young kids, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've always heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's something I've heard since our freshman year, was that he doesn't want to move his kids around once they get into school. And apparently he loves being here. Like, I mean, he's been here since, what, 2010, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a person, I think he likes being here. I think he sees the potential that this program can have. Because, like, I know if I were in a similar situation, I would have had serious doubts of leaving with the past few seasons that they've had. Because, you know, you have the success early on, you have all these offers, and then it starts to go downhill, and suddenly your stock is dropping because you've stayed here. But I think if he can kind of produce what we see now consistently with... no matter what guys come, I think he's here. I think, honestly, if he leaves, it would have to be, I think it would have to be like something that we all would obviously take.
Yeah. And let's be realistic here. I really doubt that like a Power 5 school is going to be offering Andy Tool a job unless they beat a 2 seed.
Right.
You know, unless they get a 15 and they beat a 2, or they get a 16 and they beat a 1.
Right.
It's the only way that would ever happen. So, you know, in that term, you're right. You know, and we'll just, again, you know, it'll be interesting as this year goes on to see what happens, because again, it's still very early in conference play. You know, there's still about a month, a little bit more than a month left in the season, regular season, and a lot of conference games left to play. I do want to note that the last game for men's in conference season is against St. Francis. It's the next time they play St. Francis, last game of the season. And
it's at St. Francis.
At St. Francis. Yeah. It could come down to that as to who wins the NEC. So, and that's a big deal because, you know, let's say Robert Morris doesn't win the NEC tournament but still gets that one in the regular season. That means they still get a postseason tourney.
Right.
That's whether that's the NIT, the CIT, like, it's getting postseason play, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Morris wants to go to that postseason. Right. So.
Something real quick before we end, you know, it's a Tuesday, so we have the new polls out for men's and women's hockey.
And after those two losses against Ohio State.
Men's is kind of, yeah. Never Fear. Our ranked streak continues.
Really?
But only in the USA Today poll.
Yep. Okay.
We received 13 votes, falling to 11th in the UCHO poll. St. Lawrence is number 10, and then Maine moved up to 9.
Yeah. See, like, all that makes a lot of sense to me because of the way that Robert Morse played. You know, like, this... It was close in that second one for a little while, but, I mean, they got dominated in the first one. And again, you know, you need a split to kind of stay where you are.
Right.
And Robert Morse is a good team. Like, you know, again, I just think this was a bad weekend for them. But that's the consequence of it.
Something else to note, Mercyhurst has received a vote in the UCHO poll.
Mercyhurst has been playing very well, which is interesting. I think conference play is going to be tighter than people think.
I mean, I still think we'll win it just because...
Hey, congratulations. A shout out to the new Dapper Dan. Okay, I can't hear myself. The new Dapper Dan. Is it Sports Person of the
Sports
Year?
Sportswoman.
Sportswoman of the Year, Brittany Howard.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because she's alongside names on the other side that were nominees included Andrew McCutcheon. May he forever be in our hearts.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that. How are you guys dealing with
it? Very happy
right
about
now?
It. I think that both it was trades? 2 years in the making.
Both of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really.
That, you know, if you're going to commit to selling house, sell house.
True.
Get rid of it. So Pirates need a rebuild, and they're finally starting it, and I'm very happy about it.
Out of their 25 players on their, or whatever, however many on their roster for their last winning, like the winning season where they went to the playoffs, only 7 of them remain. No pitchers. Elias Diaz, Cervelli, K-Rod, Josh Harrison, Polanco, Sterling Marte, and...
Polanco, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, cripes.
All right, well,
I was about to get real impressed.
Pirates fans, you're in for a new team. So we'll see who the next face of the franchise is. But on that note, this is going to be Sam Anthony signing off.
This is Sam Ferentz signing off. Go Colonials. Love you, Mom.
I love you too, Mrs. Ferentz.
And this is Will Camilleri signing off.
All right, and we will see you Thursday. Don't go away.